Welcome, friends. This is the Underground Writing Podcast for the week of September 16th, 2019. I'm Matt Mallion, Director of Underground Writing, a program offering creative writing workshops in at-risk community settings.
And I'm Alvin Shim, producer for the Underground Writing Podcast. On our biweekly podcast, we read and discuss a piece of writing by an Underground Writing student and briefly update listeners about what's happening in the program as a whole. Because we're a creative writing program serving at-risk populations, we do not mention students by name. We hope you enjoy this edition of the podcast.
We work in places in which people have been speaking but not heard, thus resulting in voices forced underground. Today, we're going to hear a piece by a student from our site with the Mount Vernon Migrant Leaders Club. So today I'll read from it's from the new collection, When the Dust Rises, which is our second anthology. And this is a collaborative anthology that we did in collaboration with the Mount Vernon Migrant Leaders Club. The poem is called Our Story. Society judges our covers without reading our stories, assuming it knows who we are, where we come from, what we've been through. It rips out the pages it doesn't like, those pages written with the ink that runs through our veins, those pages covered with the pain from our past, those pages we don't dare to read aloud, those pages nobody wants to turn. They don't bother to finish the book to fully understand us. One sentence, one paragraph, one page. That's all it takes for them to understand. To understand we aren't just the first chapter or the second. We are more than what people say we are. We will never be what they want us to be. We will always have our own culture, our own traditions, our own dreams. We won't let them change who we are. Because who we are is our treasure, a treasure hidden in our pages. We can be whatever we want as long as we hold on to who we are. Most importantly, as long as we hold on to where we come from. One of the first things I like about it is that it's not titled My Story, it's titled Our Story. So it's talking about a collective of people, community. There's a lot of poetry out there that deals with the I, which is fine, great. But I like that this is, it's our story. It's speaking on behalf of a community, of a family, of a tradition and culture that I would assume this author rightly feels is unrepresented in its totality.
Can you read from the, we can be whatever we want as long as?
Sure. We can be whatever we want, as long as we hold on to who we are. Most importantly, as long as we hold on to where we come from.
Do you think that's true? I thought for sure the line, we can be whatever we want, would be the end of it. I thought for sure there wouldn't be any conditions to that.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's a question that I think I have from my thinking back to my childhood. I guess I believed, yeah, that anyone that I knew could be whatever they wanted. Going back even further to this concept here in America that, like, yeah, the American way, we can, you know, anybody can do whatever they want. There's a lot of freedom and there's a lot of flexibility for us to be what we'd like to be, but I don't think we can be anything we want, literally. I think there are limits, and I think those limits are sometimes just inherent to who we are. I'm not sure I could be a great weightlifter, for example, just based on my body type. Let's, you know, as one
example. Those are excuses,
kind of corny example. Yeah, I could try. But also there are external forces that disallow people to be whatever they want in some pretty pronounced and often wrongful ways. Mm-hmm. Like people being pushed down, people not being allowed to be whatever they want for cultural, political, religious, racial, ethnic, whatever reasons.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts? Why does it stand out to you?
Well, my first thought was how I posed the question, any conditions about whatever you want to be. But the more that I sit with it, it's such a common second generation immigrant culture story, is especially when you go to a place with a landscape like Skagit Valley, there's white people, and then there's you, and there's a growing Latino population, which kind of skews this story. But I'll say for me, growing up second generation Korean in white Grand Rapids, Michigan, I'm thankful that was a short episode where I wanted to blend in and not be an other. I think that's kind of the posing of my first question. I couldn't have gotten away with not being who I am in my identity, part of that being Korean. I could have tried, and it would have just been a fool's errand. It would have been destructive to me. It would have been a waste of time. I resonate with, we can be whatever we want, because there's no one way to be what you are. There's no set way to be what you are, ethnically or otherwise. But trying to be something that you're not won't work.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. I think my first take on that, as I analyze it, is a very literal, like almost vocational.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We can be whatever we want.
Which is true.
Which is something I've, personally wrestled with for a long time in my life. But like the angle that you're saying, we can be how we need to be, how we are. We can be that way, and it's okay. Like I agree with, I like that angle too, because that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a way for more freedom for people. And that there's a certain freedom in that, no matter the external circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that plays, the author is saying that as long as we hold on to who we are. And most importantly, talking now from the historical perspective on that last line, as long as we hold on to where we come from, which is some of what you're saying, I think, mm-hmm. if I'm understanding that.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, even if we speak as vaguely as we are speaking about it, even if we take out the factor of immigrant oppression and migrant workers and this political landscape. The fact that this poem exists as an internal conversation in response to societal shunning or limiting, like you can't speak about these things without bringing in those conversations.
Yeah, and I think it's also remembering where the student comes from. It's not only the lineage of his family way back, going, how many generations back,
mm-hmm.
but where the student comes from is also this valley, mm-hmm. this time. And the student is speaking out of this context right now, which is not, we are not living even in this smaller city, smaller county here in the U.S. We are not living in a unified area. There's a lot of division here. There's a lot of discrimination, and there's a lot of tension between these students, particularly at the Migrant Leaders Club, trying to find their voices and trying to find their place amidst external factors that do not want or are not promoting that these students be whoever they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's promoting either that they fit in and not stand out, or that they go away. Right. What's it like to be whoever you want to be your unique self in a context like this where people don't want you to stand out, they don't want you to be different, they don't want you to be who you are.
There's a real sense of us and them in that poem. And I think that reflects the reality of the poet's experience and just the reality in general. I bristled this time at the line, we'll always have our own culture.
Yeah, some of that I would think is, like you said, an actual experience by the poet.
Mm-hmm.
But also a perceived experience, a perceived us-them
mm-hmm.
duality, which often is true and sometimes isn't. Why does our culture, like you pointed that out, why does that make you bristle?
Well, I think the first time it read to me as an aggressive promise to the rest of society that's rejecting them. And the second time, it was more of a, this is who we are, this is who we'll be. We can't deny who we are, our identity. So less aggressive and just more realistic. We'll always be who we are. Whatever you try to do about it, whatever we try to do about it, we are who we are. And culture is always shifting.
And there's some sense that, and I know this is probably an idealistic statement to say, but cultural traditions come from the history of a culture, but they're also things to share. Like mm-hmm. the cultural tradition of, and I'll just use a very kind of contextual example, but the cultural tradition of Oaxaca
mm-hmm.
that people from Oaxaca and the lineage that has migrated north here to the valley,
mm-hmm.
that is their own tradition. And yet part of it is shared here in the valley that we get to experience. So I would never say that that culture is my own culture.
Mm-hmm.
And yet because that cultural tradition and elements of it are present here in the valley, I do experience some of that. I go to my son's talent show,
mm-hmm.
and there's traditional Oaxacan dance going on, and I'm taking part, if only in enjoying it. I'm
right.
taking part in that culture.
Right.
My son, first or second grade, he actually was in that group, and he's not from Oaxaca,
mm-hmm.
you know, so he was taking part of that cultural tradition, even though it's not exactly his. And so this, our culture, their culture, there are plenty of blurred boundaries, whether it be by marriage or locality or whatever that goes on. And there's that element too. And I know like this poem, not every poem's going to be covering all the nuances of everything, but this mm-hmm. is just one thing that came to mind.
That is an interesting way to put it. Because culture is an active experience, whoever's in the room plays a part in that one culture there. Instead of over here in this corner is this culture, and then here's the line between that culture and this culture.
Well, I think also it needs to be said, like, we have plenty of cautionary tales about cultural appropriation, which people should be aware of and very cautious of, rightly so. There is also, in a context like the Valley, or in larger cities, let's say like Los Angeles, New York, where there are so many different cultures together,
mm-hmm.
when those cultures and the people, the individuals, can work together, there's just a wonder and a beauty that can happen, not by disregarding your own culture or giving it up mm-hmm. or having it stolen, but just having the mix of cultures together. It's like a collaborative art project that, yes, a single person could do an art project that's beautiful, but when you have a collaborative model, there's beautiful stuff that can happen in no other way than that it is collaborative
mm-hmm.
amidst the beauty of coexisting that we're learning from each other. All to say, I just think there's tensions that happen which, while not ideal, are understandable. But I think there's also, we need to acknowledge that there's also a real beauty that can and often does happen in those settings.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we need to address is that the poem is called Our Story, and yet it's not our story, Alvin and Matt's story. It's the story of this particular author, poet, and also the other students in the Migrant Leaders Club. So rather than us go on and on about it, we thought it would be great to have their voices chime in on this, and so here they are.
Follow my words, as words fall in line. My story begins when two races collide. No differences, they're just fighting for pride. Both of them human.
So Alvin and I were talking about this piece, Our Story, and we realized it's not really our story, and so we want to include students from the site, which is the Migrant Leaders Club here in Mount Vernon, and have them talk a bit about the piece. We also have the poet here to talk about the piece. And one question I have, maybe you can introduce yourselves. Just say hello, and if you want, your name, and maybe what grade you're in, if you want that.
Hi, my name is Araceli, and I'm in 10th grade.
Hi, my name is Nelly. I'm in 11th grade.
Hey, my name is Adrian, and I'm a 12th grader.
The poem, Our Story, starts out with these lines. Society judges our covers without reading our stories, assuming it knows who we are, where we come from, what we've been through. I think other people listening to this podcast or other people reading this would have that same feeling, perhaps, in their lives, like they've been judged for whatever reason. Can you talk a little about, you start the poem that way, and what your experience of this has been, or maybe where this came out of?
So I wrote this when I was like 13, and at that time, all my family was talking about was the new president, Donald Trump. And all I could think about is him talking about how he wanted Mexicans out of here. So I thought about how he was saying that, how we're most are criminals and all that. And I was feeling that he judges some of us because not everybody's like that. So that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. How about you, as you heard me read that, or as you've read it, because I know you guys have read a bunch of the book. This poem is in the book, When the Dust Rises, which has student writing by many student writers in the Migrant Leaders Club, including Adrian and Nelly as well. So when you read this poem, and it starts out this way, what has been your experience of that, and how do you hear those words?
Well, my experience for me was, like, a lot of people, like, look at me, like, after that, like, the new president, like a lot of people would look at me and like start judging me a lot more because they thought they had the right of racism. So they would start judging me by my color.
Yeah, I think that our current president is very judgmental. It doesn't really affect me because I just ignore it. But it does affect other students because they feel that their parents may be deported. And that isn't good at all, right? Yeah. I mean, who wants that? Who wants that?
Yeah, I think you're right. That whether or not the person in that position is respectable or respected, how they act does affect the rest of the country and how the country acts. I can hear what you're saying, and yeah. I agree with you. So let me go down. At the end of the poem, it talks about treasure being hidden in our pages. We can be whatever we want as long as we hold on to who we are. And most importantly, and here's how the poem ends, the last line, as long as we hold on to where we come from. Holding on to where you come from, what does that look like for you? And why do you, I trust that you still feel that's really important. And again, I agree with that. Tell us about why that is and how that is for you.
That's important for me because my family is like, they care about that stuff, like your culture, and I think that to move on, you need to like hold on to who you are and not like change it because of what you see in other people or how you think you're supposed to be. You have to hold on to who you are and where you come from, because I'm from Mexico, and I think that it's a beautiful place, and I really like to hold on to that.
Nelly?
What I felt like when I read that part, I felt like holding on to what I grew up with my family, like holding on to those treasures, like it helped me in life in general here at school. Like, I never knew how many people were, like, similar to me or exactly like me. And that helped me a lot learn of who I am also. So, like, it opened me up more.
Okay. How about you, Adrian?
I think what it means is that we must maintain our traditions because that's what identifies us as who we are in reality. We don't have to be someone else that we don't identify ourselves with. So as I said, we must maintain those traditions to be unique. What are some traditions that you celebrate with your family to maintain your identity?
What I do with my family, like, we still celebrate the Day of the Dead to remember my passed away grandpa, and we celebrated every year since he died. So it's been like 3 times we celebrated. And like, I never knew, like, there's like specific things that we needed for it. So when I started doing it, like, for example, we need like a specific bread. It's called pan de muerto, bread that looks like a man, a dead man, and then like something one that like looks like a flower.
Doesn't it look like a skull?
No, that's calavera de dulce. That's a different thing. It's a candy.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
But we use like, what are those things called? Velas?
Candles?
Candles. We use candles instead of the candy because we can't find the candy here.
Mm-hmm.
And we found those skulls somewhere else. And then you need like, I forgot what was it called, but it's like an orange flower that you needed to like guide them to your like place that you put their picture at. It's just you put a lot of their favorite things and you make their favorite food to like guide them to your home. So then on the Day of the Dead, which is like, I don't remember if it's the day before Halloween or the day after Halloween, they come, their spirit comes, and like you feel their presence for that whole day and you feel like they're still alive.
Yeah, the name of the flower is the Mexican marigold. Yeah.
Up in the, you know, the first half of the poem, it talks about, there's a line that says, they don't bother to finish the book to fully understand us. I like how the poem uses the book imagery throughout, and I think it's a good image to work. Why do you think it is, I guess, that people don't, why don't people bother to finish the book?
I think because they just see the cover, they think they get uninterested, and they just don't even bother, you know?
Mm. Have either of you felt that sort of thing? Like, not only misunderstood, but people don't have the time or the interest, really, to try to understand.
Yeah, sometimes I feel that white people don't, like, have this idea in their mind, like, this stereotype of that Hispanics aren't as good as white people, you know? But that isn't true at all, right? I would say, like, in my opinion, we are better in various aspects. Like, most Hispanics are very hardworking, and they would give anything for their family. And that's the reason I think they come to this country, to provide their whatever their family needs. And their native countries, like, the wages are very poor. Where I used to live, the minimum wage was 100 pesos, which translates to about a little over $5. I'm not guessing. That is one of the reasons why Hispanics or Latin Americans emigrate to the United States, because they know that they'll receive a better wage than $5 a day.
And by better, do you mean, like, I mean, there are certain, like, different cultures can learn from each other, and certain cultures, like, I would say Hispanic culture, just my opinion, is really strong in the family in valuing the family.
Yes.
Right. And I think certain demographics and cultures here in America could learn a lot from that.
That's right. Yeah.
Adding on to what you were saying about like us like valuing like our culture a lot, I had a conversation with my friend like I think earlier this week about this, and we were talking about like white culture, and he like told me that there's just like no white culture, like a lot of the things that they have it's like the same thing as like another culture but just like whitewashed. Let's say, for example, Christmas. For Mexicans, the true meaning is, like, the birth of Jesus Christ. And for Americans, it's, like, you get presents if you're good or bad. And so we just thought, like, oh, we just imagine that as being whitewashed because a lot of things have been whitewashed, too, to a point that, like, it's really, really noticeable. Even shows from other countries, there's the same version of it, and it's just whitewashed. Not only, like, religion is like important to people, but like other stuff is too. Being represented in around the world is really important, and like a lot of things that America does is like they either have like a majority white cast or like people aren't being represented well, or like they are being represented but like they're stereotypically, because like for example if you see like a Mexican on a movie, usually they're poor, not well-dressed, not have a good job. And then you see American, and they're, like, really well-dressed, really good job, big family, a lot of money. That's not really how Mexicans are supposed to be look like. A lot of people, like, have a purpose here in America. They look for an education, and they get wealthier, at least to be stable, to have a family. And, like, they might not dress as nice as white people, but, like, they dress pretty nice. So, yeah.
Nelly, where are you originally from?
Well, I'm from three places in Mexico, so they're totally different. My mom's side of the family comes from Veracruz, so it's, like, more south of Mexico. So, like, they have a different language, you could say, because, like, if she talks to my dad the way she talked when she was younger...
Do you mean totally like a different accent?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then my dad comes from more like a beach type of area in Mexico.
What place?
Mazatlán. Sinaloa. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come from more of a city type, Tijuana. So my mom comes from like, we could say a type of Mount Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad comes from like a Seattle area. And then I come from like an Olympia area. We could just say that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Place I used to live in was Tepic, Nayarit. It's near Puerto Vallarta, Jalisco. My mom is from Compostela, Nayarit. And my dad is from Zapopan, Jalisco. They're pretty near, like probably like a 5-hour ride. But actually, my dad never lived there. He has always lived in Tepic, Nayarit, where I used to live. I wasn't born in Mexico. I was born here in the U.S. But when I moved to Mexico, that's the place where I lived.
I'm not really sure where my mom is from. She usually never talks about it. She only told me that I was born in Baja California. She still didn't tell me where exactly. I guess she might be from there too, but I don't know why we never talk about it. So, I don't know. I'm still curious. But what my dad has said is that him and his family are from Sinaloa. And that's pretty much all I know about them.
Speaking of covers, there's three students here, and at a glance, the average Mount Vernon person might say, oh, they're all Mexican, and Adrian's technically not even. You're a U.S. citizen, but you never get, like, no one assumes that about you. People rarely assume that about me, and, like, you all listed 6-7 different places in Mexico that are all quite different from each other, different languages and cultures and things. You're not just Mexican, and that's it, and that's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a lot of that assumption when You guys are living around here?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Yeah, actually, like, my sister, well, I'm brown, as you can see. Well, you can't see. And my sister is white. And sometimes there's confusion, like, are you guys even siblings? And I'm like, yes, we are. We have the same last name, though. I mean, I'm the U.S. citizen, and she isn't. She was born actually in Mexico. And there's sometimes confusion there with friends and within our community, like in school or wherever, you know? Yeah.
A lot of people assumed I was Native American because of I was like, I'm brown, but at the same time, I'm pretty white because of my dad. Because my dad's a white Mexican and my mom's a brown Mexican. Because my dad has a lot of like Spain blood in it. And then my mom has like some African blood because of history. And so whenever my friends would like come over to my house, they would be like, oh, so your mom is black and your mom and your dad's white. I'm like, no, they're both Mexican and they come from different parts of Mexico and history happened. And they would assume, oh, so you're Native American, you're adopted. And I would say, no, they're my real parents.
So you asked if you practiced it or you celebrate Day of the Dead.
Oh, right.
And you said no.
No.
And you just your family just doesn't do that?
No, because I think that's like part of religion too. Mm-hmm. So we don't celebrate that. Or Christmas, which is most will think that's kind of weird since that could be related to the birth of Jesus.
Right.
But I don't know. My family doesn't believe that, so.
I thought that was interesting because I assumed that every Mexican celebrated Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. Not me.
Everyone is shaking their heads here. Oh, you guys don't either, Adrian. You guys don't.
No.
But you guys, you know what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your parents decided we're not going to do that.
I mean, I think we do celebrate it, but not with, like, having a altar and, and
that probably means altar.
Yeah, altar, and altar. I mean, we don't do all the things that represents the day of the death. I mean, we just remember our family members that are not there anymore, and I think that's all we do.
Can you talk about just the process of writing for you? Whenever, because you've done a lot of writing over the last few years, I would think, for the Hidden Truth event, for the book,
mm-hmm.
anything that we did kind of coming in here with you guys. Talk a little about what writing has meant in particular, because all of you have written out of your own lives, out of your own stories, and how that process has been for you and what you think about writing as a tool to make that happen.
Sometimes I think what helps with writing is your mood, or because mostly when I write, I'm like having a hard day, and sometimes I just need to write about it. And I've written a lot about not this poem, but I have other poems where I just write them and I don't even edit them or anything. I think it helps you feel better once you let it all out on a piece of paper.
For me, when I write, I feel like the thing that gets me into the mood of writing is when like something like on the news specifically happens, because then sometimes I can relate to it and like that gets me into the mood of writing. And like I have like my sources, which is that news source, and like I have my own opinion about it, and when I write my own opinion, like either a poem or a story comes out.
Yeah, what I do, like I ask my parents about dates and actual things that happened, because I mean I wrote about when I moved to Mexico when I was just 6 years old. and I don't really remember all the details. Therefore, I would ask my parents for their help. And also, I would sit down and think about how I felt during that period of time. I think I asked my mom, do you remember how I felt when we moved to Mexico? And she said that I wasn't very, very happy about it because it was like very different.
Would you guys be up for reading the poem together?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll have Adrian start, and Adrian, just read a third down or so, and then pass it to Nelly, and then from Nelly to Araceli, and then we'll have the poem.
Society judges our covers without reading our stories, assuming it knows who we are, where we come from, what we have been through. It rips out the pages it doesn't like. Those pages written with the ink that runs through our veins. Those pages covered with the pain from our past. Those pages we don't dare to read out loud. Those pages nobody wants to turn.
They don't bother to finish the book fully understand us. One sentence, one paragraph, one page. That's all it takes for them to understand. To understand we aren't just the first chapter or the second. We are more than what people say we are. We will never be what they want us to be. We will always have our own culture, our own traditions, our own dreams.
We won't let them change who we are, because who we are is our treasure, a treasure hidden in our pages. We can be whatever we want as long as we hold on to who we are. Most importantly, as long as we hold on to where we come from.
That's great. Thank you, Araceli, for the poem. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Nelly, for being here. And for also your writing in the book. And Adrian, thank you for being here and your writing in the book as well. Listeners, check out When the Dust Rises. It's available on the Underground Writing website, on Village Books website. Check out the Migrant Leaders Club website and social media. And keep listening.
Listeners, if you have a moment to spare, we'd be grateful if you'd email us some feedback to podcast@undergroundwriting.org or give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's featured writing was a piece by a student from our site with the Mount Vernon Migrant Leaders Club. You can read more about writing from this site in When the Dust Rises, Underground Writing's collaborative anthology of student writing, available for ordering via our website.
We'll have another episode for you in a couple of weeks. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Send us feedback via our email address, podcast@undergroundwriting.org. Connect with us via our website, undergroundwriting.org, and spread the word about our work by mentioning us on social media.
The Underground Writing Podcast is recorded and produced by Alvin Shim and Underground Writing. You can access it via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and other podcast outlets, as well as on our website, where we include links of interest connected to items mentioned in each episode.
The introductory music for this podcast is Cool No. 2 by Walt Hampton, as performed by the LaVenture Middle School Marimba Band here in Mount Vernon, Washington. The music you hear at the conclusion of each episode is provided by Luis Lopez and the Migrant Leaders Club in the Mount Vernon School District. I'm Alvin Shim.
And I'm Matt Mallion. Thanks for listening.
Hiding, cause for now we're surviving, and surviving is living. We are human beings, and we should not be divided. Divided. Elimination, deportation, racism, discrimination. How can you and I say that we're free when our freedom's based on